For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Good morning. I'm kind of stood in on short notice for my wife, who was scheduled to teach this morning. But if you could pray for her, that'd be great. She's had three pretty serious concussions over the last couple years, and she's still getting symptoms, concussion symptoms periodically. So the doctors put her on 3 weeks like off-site total rest, and then she's supposed to try to stay symptom-free for another couple months after that, and then can try to ramp back up on some of the activities. So it'd be great if you pray for her. Getting quality time with your kids. That's what I was asked to share on, and so that's what I'm going to do. This is going to be a sharing, not a teaching. I am not a parenting expert, that I know. So I'm sharing something that has been helpful for me, I believe, and for our kids. Many ways to have quality time with your kids. I just don't want anyone to feel like I'm prescribing some specific silver bullet. And I think what I learned to do definitely had in part to do with the fact that I'm a dad with two daughters. As I was thinking about this yesterday, I realized that if I had had two sons, I probably would have done something else regularly with them. I think back to, my father spent a lot of time with me one-on-one just teaching me sports in the backyard. And I think with boys, a lot of times, especially at a certain age, doing something with them is probably better than sitting across the table from them. I think that's so, this needs to be taken into account. But the spirit of what I was trying to do, finding myself the father of two young daughters, was to find a way forward in Ephesians 6:4, where Paul says to the parents in the Ephesian church, bring up your children. And the word bring up means to nourish or to feed. It's not so much a instructional word as a nourishing relational word. Bring up your children in the training and the counsel of the Lord. So I'm going to share with you what we did. I'm going to share with you some of the features that I think were important in what I did, and I'm going to share with you on why I think it was helpful. Won't take very long, and then if you've got feedback or questions, that'd be fine. So what I settled on was simply spending a weekly time one-on-one with each of my daughters at a restaurant. That's pretty simple, and it needed to be simple for me. It played to my strength of being a very habit schedule oriented person. So I didn't have to think about it. It's Thursday noon. I'm going to go take Abby or Jamie out of school for a half hour and take them to, at that point, McDonald's. This is something that we began when they were a year and a half old. I guess part of my thing was I thought it'd be cool if they couldn't remember when they didn't do this with Dad. And the cool thing is that we're still doing it. My daughters are now in their mid-30s. And, their lives are busier than at earlier stages of their life. They have children of their own. We want to make time for our grandchildren. Daughters. We've got four granddaughters, eight and under. So, but we still get together. Thursday is dinner time with one daughter 1 week and one daughter the other. So it's over a 35-year period. Yeah, that's awesome. Surprised they still want to do that. Here are just some of the things that I think were important in the long run, is that this was a commitment that I made, and that I was going to, unless I was sick or they were sick or unless I was out of town, we were going to do this. There weren't any other reasons for canceling. I think it was important, and I was checking with my daughters last night and confirmed that making it where do you want to go was pretty important. within reason, of course, being a frugal person, there were financial boundaries. But, you know, I think, and so this changed as they went into different stages of life. McDonald's for lunch was no longer cool past a certain point. So we would just go to different places that they wanted to go. I think it was part of what communicated to them. This was a special time with them. On my part, I just tried to focus on being present. I didn't have some curriculum or multiple bullet point goals that I was trying to accomplish. The main thing was to spend that time with my daughter, present, positive. I wanted it to be a positive time. I wanted to be other-centered. Typically, we would spend most of the time just catching up on the day. How's your day been? How was your day? Asking about things that I knew were their current interests. Sometimes talking together about some upcoming event that we look forward to, whether it was vacation or something, whatever. That's simple on the one hand, but difficult on the other hand, when your life is busy and you have a sin nature like I do. I mean, I do think that most of the time I realized I need to just turn to the Lord before we do this to get in the Spirit. I don't need to have a special time with them where I can be in the flesh in front of them. That was not going to be a good investment in the long run. I tried to talk about the Lord and also initiate prayer during these times, usually at the end of the time together. But it was not something rigid. I was more or less looking for opportunities to share in a natural way, if that was appropriate, about God. And looking for natural ways and to talk to God. I was struck by a couple of things in this regard. One was that growing up as I did in a non-Christian home, it wasn't just that my parents rarely or never prayed. It was that when I heard people pray, it was like so unnatural and weird, which had a very aversive effect on me. I mean, it just kind of communicated to me that this is not part of normal life. So I was struck as a young parent by reading one author whose name I forget, who said, when we pray with our children, it ought to be natural. It ought to not be forced. It ought to not be weird in any way, because we want them to associate this God within the relationship, and we want a model that bringing God into what we're talking about or what we're doing is just normal in a positive way. When they're little, kids are ready to do pretty much anything you want them to do spiritually. When they get to be a certain age, then it's a little more dicey, and you have to be a little bit more careful and discerning about how you talk about spiritual things, and so that's an age-appropriate thing. So this is, you can imagine, you know, Dad's taking me out as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old through much of, and Dad's signing me out of school to go to lunch, but things changed. You know, when they got to be adolescents. I have a very vivid memory of taking one of my daughters out to dinner as a teenager, and I'm like, okay, so how was your day? What's going on with you? And the silence and the cloud in the car got thicker and thicker, and I realized, I think it was probably God himself, just shut up. Just shut up and be content to not say anything until they say something, and then go with that. I talk about that period of parenting when I learned to bite a hole in my tongue. just to, you know, like you have a hole in your earlobe. I had to bite a hole in my tongue just to be quiet a lot, so that they could be the one initiating what they wanted to talk about. I think Bev pointed out also that during the adolescent years, another thing that was probably helpful about this time is that it was very bounded. It was only for an hour, because there are periods when kids, you know, that's a lot to be with a parent alone. And it was off-site versus in home, which has no beginning and no end. So it was kind of an island in that way that probably was helpful. I didn't realize that at the time. Of course, there are periods when things are very strained between you and your child. And I mean, at different kinds of difficulties at different stages of parenting. One thing that was, I think, helpful was that, you know, when we were in a lot of conflict, periods of a lot of conflict, sometimes Bev would say, well, now when you take her out to dinner, be sure and really make this point to her. And at a certain point, I said, no, I think this needs to be a no-conflict zone. We got a lot going on, and we have a lot of difficult conversations that we have to take. And I don't want this period, this time, to get dragged into that. Not that that's bad. That's really necessary. But I feel like it's especially important to keep this time as positive as possible. So being one who doesn't like conflict anyway, it's not like it was heroic for me to declare that rule. But I think it was also helpful for our relationships. Some of us, most of you, are probably going to go through very painful times with your children, either because of what's happened to them or you, or because of choices that they make. And these very painful times can be, we hope, relatively short, but sometimes they drag out into months and even years, where there's just, this is a very painful period. And, you know, there were times with both of my daughters where I'll just put it this way. There were times when I would basically cry all the way out and cry all the way back and tell God, I don't want to do this because it hurts too much, but I know that this is something that you want me to do. So, and in looking back and in talking with them, I think that was really critical, especially in the times that are really painful. Bev said, be sure and tell them at this point that you can't use the fact that your child is difficult or that your relationship is difficult at this time as a reason to pull back from a commitment like this. So I think that was helpful, important for us, I think. Yeah, just some reasons. They're pretty common sense on why something like this was helpful. Again, you can come up with your own way of spending quality time. I think the consistency is obvious. The consistency communicated that my relationship with my daughters was a priority. I mean, I was very busy during all of this time, you know, trying to help lead a church that was growing from a few hundred to a few thousand people. I had a lot on my mind. You know, nothing communicates that you take a relationship seriously than that you're there in a consistent way. Both of my daughters were adopted at birth, and something that I didn't realize at the time, I really did not give it the proper weight that I should have, is that being adopted, they were going to have special struggles with identity. I think all kids have the evil one saying to them in various ways and at various times, your parents are too busy for you. They don't really care about you. I mean, that's just a great lie to feed anyone. But in retrospect, at least, and I confirmed this with my daughters, that this was helpful in refuting that lie that I think was a special test for both of them. I provided just that regular setting where spontaneous, important conversations can happen. You know, you just can't decide and put on your schedule, have important, spontaneous conversation with daughter or son about this. Maybe you can do that when they're young and they view you as a god and hang on every word that you say, but that period really passes relatively quickly. And so, like it says in Deuteronomy 6, you know, when you're with them on the road, he describes doing life with your children, and as you do life with them, then look for opportunities to instruct them about God and God's ways. So I think that was one of the most important payoffs for this little habit that we had, is that we were doing it. We didn't have to think about whether we were going out together, one-on-one, in a place that they enjoyed. And I, you know, didn't keep count of the various spontaneous important conversations we had. Probably at the time, you don't even realize how important some conversations are. But that was a big reason why this was so helpful. When our kids were still in elementary school, I read a book that scared me to death. I think it was by Dobson. It wasn't Dare to Discipline. It was about the teen years. And in the intro, he talked about how the teen years were like whitewater rafting. And he's like, that's what the adolescent years are for your kids. They're whitewater. And he's like, your basic goal is to try to keep them in the boat or get them back in the boat as soon as you can if they fall out of the boat. And his point was that further was that the relationship that you've built with your child before they get to that stage of life is the main tether that helps you go through that period of life. And so I feel like in my case, this was the tether. This was the rope that kind of got braided together in the earlier years that held during the teen years and the difficult years when maybe nothing else in our relationship would have held. So that was important. It builds a rich history of good memories. It's not like, wow, we had a 45-minute lunch today. I'll just think about that for the rest of this year. It's not like that. These are like, you know, like a lot of forms of positive love investment. They're just investments in the bank that pay interest. I mean, that's a bad analogy because that makes parenting sound deterministic. And, you know, there are no guarantees in parenting. But our calling from God is to consistently invest love and truth into our children. And that's one of the rewards, is you have an accumulating set of memories that are, maybe the main memory is that we did this. And then there are additional memories of things that are connected to that. It has also provided a great way to experience that gradual transition in our relationship. And I think about taking my daughters out when they were toddlers, which looks very different than taking them out today when we're really adults. And they're now in the middle of the kind of life that we were in when this started. And we are more peers in the sense that now I can share about some of my challenges, and that's a helpful thing, whereas it would not have been appropriate to share when they were younger. But just to be able to have this be part of the pathway through those various stages of life has, I think, been very rich for all three of us. I interviewed both of my daughters yesterday, and here's some of the highlights. I said, you know, just what jumps out at you about these times? She said, it was important to know that that time was always carved out. So, I mean, that's something that I've already brought up. She said, it was special to be signed out of elementary school for lunch. She said it made the other kids jealous. So, okay, that makes sense. And she said to still be doing this over three decades later is pretty amazing. So that's a blessing. My daughter Jamie said, among other things, the stability, the consistency of this time, and therefore the stability that it represented, in spite of, and she was careful to say, our moods at the time, not just her moods, but my moods. And so I think part of what I gathered from that is that even though I made an effort most of the time to be upbeat and other-centered, other stuff still leaked through. But isn't it kind of cool that as she looks back on it, she realizes that even when she was in a bad mood, this was still in place. And even when she realized I was in a bad mood, it was still in place. And it kind of is a ballast that overcomes just our moodiness. I thought that was interesting. She said, and of course, always is not always. You were most of the time curious and interested. Even when I wouldn't speak to you, I remember those times, you didn't take it personally or show annoyance. I think that's probably instructive. It doesn't mean that I wasn't annoyed. Doesn't even mean that I didn't take it personally. It means that I went out of my way to present to her that I'm not going to take this personally. At one point, with one of my daughters, I think Bev said something like, "You know, they're at this point that this is just like I forget how she put it, so I don't want to misquote her. But the message sort that I took was, you know, they're taking advantage of you during these times." And I said to her, "I'm taking advantage of them. This is all money in the bank. They don't realize it right now, but what we're doing is money in the bank in terms of influence toward them." And that's, you know, a lot of time that's just a pure faith proposition because you feel like all hell's breaking loose. And she said, "You made me say thank you when I got out of the car." I think, because she said, you know, I realized that I took this for granted for many years. Eventually, I realized that this was a gift. But I felt, I don't remember this, but I'm sure that I felt like it's important for you to learn to express appreciation. Not so that I can feel okay about myself, but because it's good for you. That's all I got. If you've got questions or comments, I'd be glad to do my best to respond. Yeah.
My daughter's one, so I don't think this is happening anytime soon, but I'm sure there's going to be a time where she doesn't want to spend with me. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that? Were there times where they're like, "No, I don't want to go"? Did you still say, "Well, you have to"? And did that happen maybe often?
My daughter Jamie's here, so she could maybe chime in. My recollection is it just simply wasn't an option. It's not. It was just like, this is what we do. Of course there are times when we don't want to do things that are positive and good, but it was never an option. Do you remember it that way? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had been doing it for so long.
Yeah, the longer that you do it, the more you just realize this is what we do anyway.
Hi, I just had a question about family time versus one-on-one time. To schedule them both each week, or?
Oh, I don't know.
Or the importance of them, yeah.
I mean, I think that family time together is really important, and there are probably people that are way more qualified than me to talk about how to do that creatively. I mean, we definitely prioritized spending time together as a family every week. So I don't think it's either or. My burden was that in addition to family time, which is a totally different dynamic, to be able to have this one-on-one time was a crucial way to augment that for family time. Yeah.
I just had a question because, you know, I'm stay at home, so I'm pretty much one-on-one with my only daughter all the time.
Yeah, you got a lot of this.
Yeah. Do you have any recommendations specifically for that kind of situation?
Make sure that your husband does this so that you can get a break. I don't know. I mean, even yesterday, one of my son-in-laws called me and said, it's been a rough day for my wife. Why don't you grab her for half an hour? So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that you need a break from every day, all day, one-on-one with your kid. This is a great thing for your spouse to do with so really getting behind that, not nagging, but getting behind it. And yeah.
So I know when my husband and I were thinking about doing this, we started to feel really daunted by the time factor.
Yeah.
We have three girls, and we had decided we really wanted each of us to have one-on-one time with them every week. And for us, we realized we had to schedule it. So we kind of had to sit down in our calendars and kind of look at it and treat it as if any other time that we would get with anybody else. But what has been so cool is that as we've started to do that, I actually feel like we have more time. It's really weird the only thing I can think of is because we're engaging in that in a meaningful way somehow and trying to be connected with them, we don't constantly feel like we're grasping for more.
Yeah.
And so it kind of has made us feel like we have actually more time, even though we have these additional kind of commitments that we've put into our calendar.
That's a great point. Maybe, and I'm just speculating, you know, parents often wrestle with conscience issues. Am I doing enough for my kid? Am I engaged enough? So maybe something simple like this helps us have a good conscience more often. And I think you may be deriving some benefit that you can't quantify in the overall family dynamics that is because you're spending this kind of time with them one-on-one. Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it's helpful too, like when we have, because we're busy with doing other things, that we can tell them, I'm really looking forward to getting our one-on-one time together, so that when they know, like, oh, why are you leaving me and everything, we're like just realizing that, you know, they aren't the center of the world, but that you are valuing their time and that they have something to look forward to.
That's a great point. Yeah, I forgot about that because it was a counterbalance to I have to go out of town for these days or whatever. Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah.
I had two questions. One, I like your point about having prayer be natural.
Do you
think that there are settings? I know that this is just the one-on-one time talk, but did you have structured prayer time, like, you know, before they went to bed, you guys prayed?
Yeah. When our kids were little, they were highly motivated to stay awake at bedtime. So, you know, there's two ways you can look at that. You can be like, I am tired and I am done, or this is a unique opportunity because they're highly motivated to stay awake. So what I did in the early years was tell them a Bible story and tell them a daddy story. And then we'd pray together. So a Bible story, you know what Bible stories are. But then I would tell them a story about me when I was their age. And they loved that, you know. I don't know whether I eventually ran out of stories and had to make them up, but it didn't matter. Somehow the combination of those two felt personal and natural. And then, you know, and we would pray at the end, and sometimes they would say, I don't want to pray. I never made a big deal out of that. I think again, this is my opinion, I think we want our kids to realize that talking with God is a natural thing, and it's a good thing. And so there's a lot of ways that we can send a different message to them about that. Because if they get that point, of course, they have to come to the point when they receive Christ and begin a relationship with Him. But even before that, we want them to conceive of talking to God in this way.
I was just wondering about, so you did this with your daughters. What did your wife do? Did your wife, I mean, what was that background?
Oh, speaking for my wife, that's a dangerous proposition. I know that, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom, so she was with our daughters, you know, a lot more than me. To my remembrance, she didn't do this with you guys. I mean, they would. My wife's pretty spontaneous, in case you don't know her. So that, they probably had way more spontaneous adventures and treats than they ever got from me. So hopefully we were complimentary in that way. But this was something I kind of felt like I need to do something like this, since I'm around them less than she is. Yeah.
So this is really right on point for me right now. I'll try to keep this short. So I have one child that I have ADHD, and my child has ADHD. And there's a component of that people suffer as kids with this feeling that it's an insecurity. Because we have this behavior that we know annoys people, but we are unable to control it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this impulsivity that happens that gets you in trouble a lot. And when you see the reaction of disappointment or anger or frustration in the adult, it becomes this internal dialogue of, you know, I'm an idiot, or I'm stupid. Why can't I, you know, be better? And so because my father suffered from it as well, he was very much into studying and learning behavior, taking classes about how do I fix this in my life. And so one of the big things was, well, you suffer from this, but your daughter does as well. And one of those components is this feeling that the inability for the child to ask for attention, or could you, you know, can we do this or whatever? And they desperately need it, but they're too insecure to ask for it. And so this whole component of quality time is very important for that child, because an ADD person in a environment of more than them is overwhelming. Your senses,
The more people that are involved in the setting.
Well, yeah, it takes away from you. You then become withdrawn, because it's sensory overload. And so this idea of one-on-one with your parent, it's you feel relaxed. You feel I have their undivided attention. So I have the time and the space to really explain what I'm feeling, what's going on. And so you feel there's a patient moment for them to hear you, respond, reassure, want to address it, because it's not like you're competing with everyone else for their attention,
yeah, that's
right?
Cool.
So this quality time, and I grew up with this component in my childhood, my dad doing this with me. And so I'm actually, my husband and I are in the parent therapy to help our son with the ADHD, and this has been brought up as well. It's very important that with a child like this, that you have to set aside that time with them. And it could be 5 minutes, it could be 15, it doesn't have to be an hour.
Right.
But again, like she was saying, you know it's happening, it's on the schedule, they can look forward to it, and it creates this sense of security for them.
That's very cool, yeah.
Another question, sorry. What do you think about reading the Bible during your one-on-one time? I know some people have talked about that. We're not there, so I haven't really considered it.
Again, I think it's different at different stages. When your kids are little and they want to stay up and it's bedtime, they'll listen raptly to whatever you read to them. So that to have a picture Bible to read to them so that they can see the pictures. I think you're just looking, to me, the principle is at all stages of their life and development, you're looking for appropriate and creative ways to get God's truth in. And it's going to be different. I mean, it's just going to be different at different stages. It's going to be different in accordance to their stage of development as a person. It's going to be different according to the state of receptivity that they are presently in. The rule is when people are receptive, you give them more. When they're not receptive, you give them less. You give them, but you give them less. The ways that you do it. But that's the overriding principle, that verse in Ephesians 6:4. We're looking for ways to nourish our children with God's truth. And to do it, try to do it in ways that don't become unnatural or aversive to them. That's what I want to give an account to God that I did my best to make this linkage between them and Him, His word, His talking to Him as a positive thing. Yep.
Somebody asked what you do if your kid doesn't want to do one-on-one time with you. I had a comment about that. My dad would take me out to lunch weekly. And even in my adolescent years, I don't remember not wanting to do that because I got out of school.
Yeah.
And I got to go out to eat wherever I wanted, within reason. So I'm not sure that once you build that relational consistency, and I don't know, maybe it could be different based on temperament, but I always liked that time, even if I didn't necessarily want to talk to him.
But see, he stacked the deck in your favor.
Right.
That's the point.
Well, I get to get out of school.
There's usually a couple things that will make this enjoyable to them. And you're banking on that overriding the occasional moodiness.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
In my case, it wasn't
occasional. It was very frequent in adolescence. But another comment I wanted to make is that I did, adolescence, teenage years are difficult. I had a particularly hard time for a couple years in high school, and it was that consistent relational time with my dad specifically that I think got me through that time, kept me out of more trouble than I think I would have gotten into if I didn't have that relationship
built the tether.
With him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if I wouldn't have had that time with him consistently, those years would have been a lot worse. And sometimes I wonder what would have happened to my walk if it would have gotten even worse.
Yeah.
So kind of just wanted to promote this even more. That's super important, I think, especially father-daughter time. So.
Very cool.
So this goes outside the scope a little bit of the quality time. But it coincides with the verse that you were using about raising them up and understanding spiritual truths and mm-hmm. who God is. I have a child who is very resistant to God mm-hmm. and even mentioning his name mm-hmm. sends her in this tailspin. And I think part of it is because she's on the spectrum and God's a very abstract thing. And so she's not really able to understand the whole abstract of it. But what would you recommend in ways of getting them to understand God's truth without right telling them you're talking about him? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're asking. I'm not sure how I'm going to answer. I have a couple of thoughts, and maybe some of you have additional and better thoughts. One would be that it's really important that we just kind of absorb that negative reaction from our young kids. I mean, it's concerning and it's bothersome, etc., but I think the worst thing we could do would be to react to it when they're young. Because that's just going to set up this other dynamic that now mom and dad are upset or concerned. A lot of what you're doing is just absorbing it. Even if you may be really dying inside, you want to just kind of have as little negative reaction as possible. And if you can say, with a degree of honesty, you know, I remember feeling the way you feel. That takes the edge off. I think in whatever ways we can model our excitement about our relationship with God in age-appropriate ways, I think that has way more impact than we often realize. It seems disconnected from the current problem. My son doesn't want to talk about God. But it's been interesting to me to hear my daughters say, you know, they remember, you know, us talking excitedly about what we were learning from God, talking, being excited about how God had answered a prayer, seeing us read the Bible when we were alone and realizing that that was important to us. So the positive modeling and the forbearing, absorb it. If you can, I think especially answered prayer, if there's any way, if there are any opportunities where your child and you pray for something that is an issue for them, or they let you pray about it even though they won't, and when you see an answer to prayer, to not only report that answer but to show appropriate excitement. Okay. Those are some ideas.
Thanks. I don't know if this has any relevance to what she was talking about, but I wonder if looking, like focusing on the life of Jesus is a little bit more concrete, mm-hmm. too. What I was thinking about with your talk today is my dad did something really similar, but part of that was because my parents were divorced when I was, you know, 11 and onward. And so some of this, like, that's really a memorable time for me. Similar things as far as the importance of listening, not having an agenda, mm-hmm. you know, I felt, you know, and not reacting to all of the negative, you know, crazy trends that were going on. It's like, but I feel like my mom really missed out, like I missed out on having something like that with my mom. And so I, you know, I had that similar question about, I don't know, examples of with Bev or other moms that you've seen do this, but so if you can think of examples of that, but I guess I just thought, man, I hope that I can take some of the things you're talking about, like having intentional time set aside where you're removed from the home setting,
yep.
and where you're taking a break from current issues.
Yep.
You know, because I feel like a lot of us as moms, like, it's hard to have a separate setting,
yeah.
but it could be really
yeah.
helpful in our relationships.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I wish that I could think of or remember more of what my wife did in this area. Do you have any memories that come to mind?
She was just a lot more present during the day-to-day, so she was there in the moment of whatever was happening, whereas Dad came after the fact normally. So there was this pretty large different dynamic when it came to that. That's probably the biggest thing, is talking in the moment with my mom rather than kind of waiting to talk to my dad about
yeah.
it.
That worked well for me too. All right, you want to pray? Oh, I'm sorry.
I got one.
Yeah.
I just have a couple of thoughts on this. We have four
oh boy.
Kids.
Oh boy.
Freshmen in high school
oh boy.
To kindergarten.
Oh boy. We're
and,
praying for you when we
well,
end.
My husband's really good at this. I have never, this has not been my strong suit, but just to give some people some ideas, I feel like some of the things that I've done is like, just little things that I have to do, whether it's like the kids need shoes, it'd be like, I'll take, you know, my son to go shoe shopping and I'll call it a date and it won't be anything more than buying a pair of shoes, but it's that one-on-one
yeah.
time, and that's very
that's
special
awesome.
To him. my daughter is like a crafting fanatic and she's in second grade. And so you take the kid to Hobby Lobby and she thinks it's like a glimpse of heaven. And so you call it a date, you know, and maybe she gets a candy bar when you leave, you know. Then my freshman in high school was a teenager, and this was all like super applicable to my life. Sometimes I feel like things in here are really young and I'm sort of through that, but this was really good. And so with her, she's just like late night conversations. Like we don't really get to go places necessarily together. Just listening to her late at night, having that time is helpful. And then my junior high boy is probably the most difficult for me, but he would like me to just like sit there and look at his Minecraft world. And, you know, I have like vertigo watching the things move around and everything, but he really likes telling me about it. So my,
those are great examples.
Yeah. Just finding things that your kids like and being available when you can.
Yeah. So. That's awesome.
Thanks, Gary. This was great. I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Leonard Sachs speak last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so everything that you're sharing here today just is the personal and practical application of what he was talking about when he addressed so many things for like 3 hours. We were still at the edge of our seat at the end of it because it was just so good. He has written a couple of books. One of them is called The Collapse of Parenting. And
collapse.
The collapse.
I thought you said the collapse.
Invisalign, it makes it hard to speak sometimes, so apologies. Yeah, so just how we have lost our influence in our kids' lives as parents. And I particularly, thank you, liked how you tied in that verse about nourishing with the idea of the weekly meal. And one of his concluding points was just like fight for supper with your family. He didn't get in so much to the one-on-one time, though. He just kind of gave all these scientific reasons why, you know, we've been displaced as parents by just technology and, you know, the video games and this, that, and the other. I just can't recommend it enough, and I'm happy to share additional resources and things, but I just wanted to make that point as well, that, you know, this was just really timely for me, so thank you.
Yeah.
And all of the research pointing to how if we don't fight for this time with our kids, we're just going to continue to see not just the collapse of parenting, but culture, you know. So, yeah, good books to suggest as well. So
it makes me think of something that I'll just close with. You know, when we were raising our kids, we didn't have the screens to deal with besides TV time, which is a lot easier to, you know, limit. If I were doing something like this today with young kids, I would try as everything I knew how to help them enjoy this time apart from screens. Maybe now more than ever, they need a regular experience of something that's really healthy and positive that doesn't involve screens. Not that they can't have screen time, but that would be something that I would tear what's left of my hair out trying to figure out how to do that, because I want to give that to them since they're growing up in a culture that's so immersed in screen time. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to pray for us. Lord, thank you for our children. And I was talking with someone earlier this week about what a multitasker you are. We know marriage is a gift, but at the same time, Luther said marriage is the schoolhouse for character, where we really learn how much more self-centered we were than we thought we were. And I think it's obvious the same with parenting. Our children are gifts, and yet they're also contexts in which you keep us growing. And so just thank you for how you're able to do a lot of things at once in our relationships with our kids. I just do pray that you'll show each parent here and their husbands how you want them to put into practice this principle. It's not the structure that I shared, it's the principle, and it's the drawing upon you the power that we need to be consistent in loving our kids. We just pray for that. We pray for our children, each and every one of them. We're so thankful that you know them way better than we do, and you love them more than we do, and you have a way forward for each of them, and you've given us this privilege to have this role with them. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.